Ars Electronica 2009 Human Nature Podcast.
So here we have Josef Penninger, as I said before, studied medicine, immunology, and historian of arts in Innsbruck, and is the current director of the newly established Institute of Molecular Biotechnology of the Austrian Academy of Science. Please welcome Josef Penninger.
So thanks for inviting me. It's a hard act to follow, and congratulations for winning the Golden Leica to this really, in my opinion, very important work and very groundbreaking work. So I just thought that telling you about some of the organisms we created over the last years in my lab and what these organisms actually told us. I'm a trained MD. Actually, this is what interests me. How can we model human diseases in other organisms, like in mice? And I will show you some new things. We model human diseases in fruit flies, those little flies you find on your vegetable. And the reason why we do this is because nowadays we want to create a functional map of the world, of the genetic world. You all know in 2003 the first draft of the human genome was published, which took 13 years, $2 billion, thousands of researchers who labored away. This week we probably can sequence one human within 1 week for $10,000, and in the future it will be possible to basically mine the entire genome of everybody who sits here for around $1,000, even if it's more expensive. Within a few years, this technology has exploded to an extent that it's completely revolutionizing science, medicine, and of course, as we've heard now, arts. I like this last comment because that we live with bacteria, just a little anecdote. So if you would actually take this body as it stands in front of you, grind it up and create a sequence of me, you would actually only find 5% human sequence. The rest is bacteria and viruses, so 95% of this organism, which is standing in front of you here, consists actually of virus and bacterial DNA, which is an interesting idea. What does it actually mean? How do we interact with our environments? And nobody really understands these questions. So for us, knowing all this information on genomes of bacteria, of viruses, of mining genomes now in the oceans, for biodiversities, for knowing rat genomes, plant genomes, fly genomes, is of course, at the end of the day, what does it all mean? So what's the meaning of a particular gene? So what are they doing? And if we learn what they're doing, how can we extract the information? And this is what meant that experimentalists and scientists have to reduce the system that we can understand it. This is actually a little mouse embryo where we inject embryonic stem cells. So I was involved early on in 1990 in generating one of the first knockout mice in the planet, a new technology which won some years ago the Nobel Prize, where you basically take stem cells, and in stem cells of an animal, you can change any gene you like. So you can change just the number, gene number 12,012, create a new cell, a cell which has never existed before on the planet, take this cell, put it in a little embryo, and out of this little cell you generate a completely new organism, something which we call a knockout mouse. Basically changing genes in animals, and of course this created the possibility for us to ask the question, what is this gene actually doing in the living organism which has social interactions, has sex, runs around, and so on. So of course, when we started this work, or were involved in starting the work, we had no idea that some years later, Dolly came into existence, so there was actually possibilities of cloning, and we had no idea that you could actually take cells from anybody here. You can even freeze cells for 20 years, bring them back to life, grow them again, and reprogram a skin cell, for instance, as a sitio, into an embryonic stem cell where you can then repair genetic defects and let them grow into anything you like, into nerve cells, into heart muscle, into other tissues, of course, with the idea someone in the future has a heart attack, you take a piece of the skin of this person, reprogram the cell into a stem cell, and create an entirely new heart out of it. So we indeed live in a brave new world of genetics, of stem cell technologies, and of course create some interesting ethical questions. If you can actually clone or take an adult cell of all of us and create new organisms, so what actually happens to the human soul, which is apparently not dividable. So this is one of our mice we made when we do this. So the little mouse on the bottom is actually a genetically modified mouse, and you can see it's the same age as its brother on the top, but the heads changed. The heads look like hamsters. They did not have any teeth anymore. They were very tiny. And the reason was, it turns out, we had hit the master gene for bone loss. So these little red things on the left side are actually osteoclast cells, which control how much bone we have. There are hundreds of millions of people on the planet who have bone diseases, old age osteoporosis, crippling and arthritis, kids with leukemia lose bone. And actually, it turns out when we genetically modify this gene, which we call RANK ligand, then we got an animal which didn't have a single bone-eating cell in the body anymore. So when we published this, the media basically said we had hit and identified a famous osteoporosis gene, the essential gene which controls how much bone is in our body. And based on this little finding, we could actually rationally explain bone loss and osteoporosis, crippling and arthritis, why people lose their teeth, why asthmatics lose bone, why people with HIV AIDS patients lose bone, why people who travel to space lose bone in zero gravity. And the beauty of it was 10 years later, there will be probably medicine on the market based on our little tiny animal I showed you, entirely new rational medicine, which might be prone to actually treat these millions of patients for these diseases. So the data actually, 2 injections per year are sufficient to mostly wipe out osteoporosis. So the one reason why we actually modify this organism and create a new animal, a mouse, is because the grand mufti of Serbia actually told me scientists, good scientists, are people who observe nature and basically try to use the observations. And this is what we use with these animals, because sometimes these animals tell us things we would have never thought about and basically follow serendipically the ways of these animals. One thing which really puzzled us was actually the same gene which makes a protein was also in the white blood cells, in our blood cells. And this could not make sense, and so we asked a very heretical question. Could it be that our blood cells, as they circulate, actively change how much bone we have in our body? And this was the experiment which led to an entirely new field of research. So why would this be important, that our white blood cells make a protein which controls how many bone-eating cells we have? One disease is rheumatoid arthritis, affects 1 in 100 people, starts with inflammation, and turns out these cells, which are white blood cells, making the protein which drives generation of bone-eating cells. So the idea was, if this is real, then we shut it down, and we should completely shut down crippling in arthritis, and this was the experiment to show it. And actually, this has now been done in humans, and you can see exactly the same. Another question which puzzled us was, so if you could actually play God, or however you like to play this, and create evolution in organisms which have bones, so why would they actually put bone metabolism, the strength of bone, which is essential for us to actually walk around and interact with others, why would you actually put them under the control of sex hormones? And that's the experiment of nature, older women in menopause, because of hormonal changes, develop bone loss. So we had a very strange finding in our animals, and this was, you saw our tiny mice, and if they were females, they wanted to have sex, they had babies, but all the babies always died. And the reason why the babies died turns out the same protein which controls how much bone we have actually also controls lactation in pregnant women. And the reason why it controls lactation is because sex hormones turn it on, and this drives the mammary gland cells to grow, lactate, and at the same time it turns on the bone-eating cells, suck out calcium from the bone to calcify and generate the tissue called bone into a healthy state. So a rational explanation why sex hormones control how much bone is in the body, why women get more bone loss, based on this genetically modified organism I showed you. And actually this took us recently straight into breast cancer. There are now lots of data that hormonal replacement therapies in old women lead to breast cancer. We have not published it yet, but turns out one of the reasons is actually the protein I showed you, and when we shut it down, we can markedly reduce incidence of breast cancers in animals. And of course, based on this, there will be in the future cancer prevention trials to maybe, based on our little tiny mouse, one day prevent breast cancers in women. So we did all this in America, or the initial studies, and then the Academy of Sciences in Vienna asked me if I would like to come back to Europe. And so the idea was simple. They gave me a lot of money. I could create my own institute. I was allowed to hire whoever I liked. I put my philosophy of science into the institute. We created the first open laboratory for genetics for kids and anybody who wants to play with these things ever in this country. And with the simple philosophy, hire the best young intellectual minds in the world and give them enough money and academic and spiritual freedom to follow up what they actually like to do. And of course, then we could introduce a philosophy of research and what we like to do. And so we decided, and a colleague of mine, Barry Dixon, did this, to study fruit flies or Drosophila, so the one on the left top. And the reason was because new technologies allowed us to basically shut down every gene in the fruit fly with transgenic technology. So Barry's people made within 4 years 20,000 completely new fly organisms, which now allow us to basically shut down any gene in the brain, in the fly heart, in the fly liver, in the fly fat, and basically mine the entire genetic genome of one organism for how hearts develop, how brains function, how behavior occurs. And of course, behavior is interesting. This is what Barry studies. And then the idea then was, if we have this information, a functional genomic map of one organism, which we decided to be flies, then we hook up with human geneticists. And as I told you, within a very short time, one can actually get genetic maps. As we all sit here, we are 99% identical. There's 1% difference. And of course, if you look at your neighbor, you know, we look a little different. There's different susceptibilities to being taller or not so tall, having different noses, or being susceptible for diseases. And people are mapping this now at grand scale. For instance, the entire island of Iceland is basically a mapping effort for a company called Decode. And so we're comparing these maps. And at the end of the day, we create a new organism, the stem cells, change the gene in a mouse, and ask the question, if what we found in the fly and in human associations, which are basically mathematical associations, because we can't do experiments in humans, really, are they real, and are this the right gene which control disease? This is actually a fly and a fly heart, how it beats, a movie from Wolf Bodmer from San Diego. Fly hearts are very interesting. They're very similar to ours. So you see them actually beat. They have a very similar heartbeat rate, conductance as humans. So we actually use this model to mine the entire fly genome for heart failure genes. So one of the genes we pulled out is this one. which we and others called angiotensin converting enzyme number 2. And why I'm telling you this, turns out ACE2 is the essential receptor for the SARS coronavirus, this virus which came into the world some years ago, scared the entire planet because it kills through lung failure. And actually, when we infect our animals, and we again made a mutant mouse infected with the SARS virus, there's no infection anymore. So this little experiment we published was basically the first genetic proof that this protein, which we pulled out in flies called ACE2, is the essential receptor for the SARS virus. No ACE2, no virus infection. And the reason also why this is interesting, turns out ACE2 protects us from normal lung failure. And we believe that's the reason why the SARS virus became a killer, because it hit the molecule which protects us, and by hitting it, it basically got rid of it. I'm simplifying. And so the patients who got infected lost protection, and now out of more or less a harmless virus, a killer occurred and it killed people. So why would this be important? And I think it's important because the SARS virus actually might have shown us an entirely new medicine for lung failure, because this type of lung failure actually occurs not only in SARS infection, it occurs in the bird flu, in the swine flu, which is going around now, in the famous Spanish flu, which killed 40 to 50 million people, and of course in anthrax and the old scare of bioterrorism. So the idea is that from the SARS virus, we can actually learn, and from our genetically modified organism, they showed us a new medicine which might work for all of these diseases. And we developed this, and 2 weeks ago we started our first human trials. So another disease which interests me is obesity. There's 1 billion people in the world who are obese. It's not necessarily the rich countries, Mexico, and many obese people in the US. It's a disease more or less of the poor. So we ask questions, what would actually take it for a Homo sapiens to become a Homo sapiens? And one idea was that this would be regulated through energy production in something which is called a mitochondria. And indeed, when we manipulated it, we could actually get mice which were skinny, and also we realized we can create fat flies and skinny flies. So we decided to mine again the entire fly genome for genes which control obesity. And so we created skinny flies and fat flies, and actually created them in a way where we could only switch off the entire genome, again 20,000 different new organisms having been come into existence the last years. And we now can look through each of them, and basically 2 million experiments later, and ask the question, which gene controls in the muscle obesity, which gene controls in the liver obesity, which gene controls in the brain that an animal gets obese or stays skinny, or which genes control this in the fat. Actually, we hit one of the genes, and when you look at this mice we created again, the left one is normal, and the right one is a mouse which basically is entirely skinny. So a gene we pull out from skinny flies, we change it in a mouse, and we got a completely skinny mouse. And the beauty of this mouse is actually we have 2 types of fat cells. It's the white fat, which is also called the bad fat, and there's a good type of fat cell, which is called the brown fat cell, and actually our mice are lacking only the white fat cells, but still keep the bad, sorry, keep the good fat, the brown fat. And now to my last little example, we also decided to create a new model to study pain in insects. So Greg Neely in my lab, actually with many people from Harvard and other places, developed a fly model for pain perception. And it basically works if I put my hand here and it's hot, the signal is sent into my brain, and I put my hand away, and of course I know this is hot and I don't put my hand back. So a complex behavior. And so we basically wanted to mine the entire genome of an organism for a complex behavior, which has never been done before. And basically what we're looking for is also flies sitting on a hot surface and being able to sense it and escape the surface. This is actually the brain map in flies. These are the brain region which control pain perception in the fly. And then after 2 million experiments again, you basically can create a global network of genetic interactions which are required for pain perception in this organism. So basically, instead of reducing science, as we've done it before, one knockout mouse after the other and asking a question, what could this do? We actually have now the capability to create entirely holistic visions of pathways again, and basically we created this global pathway for pain perception, we created a global map of obesity, and we have created a global map of heart failure now. The other thing we can do is something our bioinformaticists in Bangalore actually extracted from economics and sociology, something called ectosemiotic networking, because at the end, if you create this large set of data, you mostly find what was known before. So we needed to find new things. And actually how it works, it's basically you look at the population of people you don't know, look how they interact, and of course, if I know he knows 10 other scientists, but only one artist, then I probably know you're into science. And if you know 10 more artists, but only one scientist, so my speculation is you're probably into art. And this allowed us to really find really completely new things. One of them, for instance, we call straight jacket. That's again, these are the nerve cells in the brain of a fly, which are positive for straitjacket, again, made by Greg Neely, a brilliant guy from Canada who works with me. So we also created a straitjacket mutant mouse. So what I showed you was flies. And this is the brain of this mouse, and it puzzled us because straitjacket turned out to be only in the brain. So the idea before was that sensing of heat is actually located in the skin nerves, and so this was very unique. So we decided we actually watch the mouse in the brain during having pain. So we basically gave the mouse a brain signal, put them into a functional imaging machine, and created a 3D map of all the brain regions which control pain perception. And this is how it looks. So this is basically the first ever 3D whole brain reconstruction of pain regions, or of brain regions which control pain perception to heat in the mouse. So this is normal, and of course we got interested what happens when you do the same in an organism which lacks this gene straitjacket Greg had found in Drosophila. And to make it short, it turns out the brain signal comes normally into the brain, but is not transmitted to higher order brain centers which normally process pain. But instead, the brain signal is transmitted to the visual cortex, to the sensory cortex, and the olfactory cortex. So I'm exaggerating now, but what Greg basically found is he created an animal which now starts to see, hear, and smell the pain signal. So this was very interesting because there's a human condition called synesthesia. Messiaen, for instance, was one of them who had it, who claimed when he looks at music, he can actually see the colors. There are many people out like this. It has been associated with intelligence, with creativity, because it's interesting if you have one sensory input, and the sensory input is then linked to other senses in your brain, and of course it might allow to be more creative, to connect more pathways. So again, this little fly showed us a pathway which might do this. And so I end here. So the message I really wanted to tell you is that, so we do genetic engineering for a long time. The reason why we do it is because in a reductionistic way, it allowed us to find the essential function of a gene in a living organism, as I showed you, for this gene which controls bone loss. And of course, then you come up with some interesting surprises if you create this new organism, which of course you can all put back to normal physiology again. but also modern science, like creating this 20,000 new fly strains where we can mine genomes, entire genomes, for pathways, for thinking, for aggressive behavior, as Barry Dixon is doing it, for stem cell differentiation, for heart failure, for pain. Of course, allows us now to actually go all the way back and create again science which is systemic, integrates lots of pathway. Maybe my final statement is the genetic revolution is here to stay. It's in our daily life. Google has invested in it. And I think it's very interesting and to have an artistic representation of what we're doing. And I think it's long overdue, and I hope more people will do this in the future. So thanks for listening.